to agenda item number 8. This is an informal interview on complaint number 1834 with Dr. Scott Padella. This is discussion, consideration, and possible action relating to allegations of unprofessional conduct, proposed findings of fact, conclusions of law, possible discipline, and or offer of a consent agreement or referral to a formal hearing. It is now 10:15 on August 9th, 2019. This is the informal interview of Scott Padella, PsyD, in case number 1834. Board members, the materials for this agenda item are located in your electronic folder. Dr. Padella, would you please come forward? Grab a seat, neither. Are you represented by legal counsel today?
No, sir.
Please introduce yourself.
I'm Dr. Scott Padilla, PsyD.
I mispronounced your name.
It's okay, it happens
all the time. Thank you, Dr. Padilla. I'm Dr. Bohansky, chair of the board. The other board members and staff will now introduce themselves. Dr. Meyer, can you start?
Dr. Matt Meyer.
And Dr. Lynn Flowers.
Dr. Ramona Malott.
Tamara Shreve.
Joe Donaldson.
Diana Davis-Wilson.
Jenna Jones, executive director.
And Jean Galvin, assistant attorney general.
Jennifer Michelson, deputy director.
Kathy Fox, licensing specialist.
Krishna Poe, administrative assistant.
This proceeding is being audio. Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Brundage.
Dr. Candace.
Thank you. This proceeding is being audio recorded, so please speak loudly and clearly, and only one person at a time. Doctor, you've received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at an informal interview, such as dismissal, letter of concern, probation, civil penalty, restitution, temporary suspension, or referral to a formal hearing. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. Board members have read all the materials and any additional submissions. If it's necessary to refer to clients or patients during the interview, please do so only by initials. I will read the allegations from the informal interview notice, and then we will interview you. Is the complainant present?
Yes, I think so. I heard him earlier.
I am.
Yeah, thank you. If he is here online, we'll hear from the complainant first, and then we will proceed with issues. Would you like to make a statement?
AC.
Yes, I'll make a brief statement. I've turned over all the documentation that I have, which initially aroused my suspicions of the misconduct on the part of Dr. Padilla. At this point, my only interest in this is just trying to make sure that this same situation doesn't happen to another family. The consequences of what went on have been far-reaching and will probably be long-lasting for my family, and I just want to make sure that, one, the truth is fully disclosed, and that whatever a reasonable and fair outcome can be brought is brought to protect other people from, as I said, having to deal with similar situations. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, AC. Dr. Padilla, the allegations brought against you in case number 1834 are as follows. ARS 3220 61160, for possibly providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe, or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice, and 16DD, for possibly violating an ethical standard adopted by the board as it relates to the APA Ethical Principles 3.05 regarding multiple relationships. Doctor, I will now swear you in. Right hand, please. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you, sir. Doctor, do you wish to make any opening remarks?
No, I think I'm okay with moving forward.
And to begin the interview, we'll start with a summary of the case. Dr. Brundage is the lead on this. Dr. Brundage, could you please provide us with a summary?
Thank you, Dr. Bohansky and board members. The case 18-34 is against Scott Padilla, license number 4881. Dr. Padilla was licensed by this board August 11, 2017. The complaint was submitted by ex-husband of Dr. Padilla's patient. And ex-wife began therapy August 2017. The complaint alleges that ex-wife and Dr. Padilla had a sexual relationship during their therapeutic relationship. AC described reconnecting with his wife in 2011 and having two children within a three-year period of time. He indicated that his multiple stressors with the couple regarding life events. Wife chose to reinitiate therapy and found Dr. Padilla in the middle of 2017. AC indicates that shortly after his ex-wife began therapy, that, quote, their marriage began falling apart, unquote. Ex-wife appeared to be increasingly angry with AC and blamed him for troubles in the marriage. AC attended one session and alleges that his wife was attracted to doctors. Shortly thereafter, he expressed concern that his ex-wife and the doctor were having an affair. They spoke to his wife, and she denied the allegations. They even wrote that there was a lot of text and that his wife had been secretive with her phone. He also drew up a draft of divorce papers in December, but things improved, and he accepted a position in Seattle in 2008. AC alleges that Dr. Padilla and his ex-wife text more frequently, often at night during non-business hours. In June 25, 2018, AC alleges that he found evidence that Dr. Padilla and ex-wife had a sexual relationship through his wife's journey. His divorce was finalized on November 25, 2018. He alleges that wife confessed to his affair with Dr. Padilla. Wife's last session with Dr. Padilla was April 25, 2018, where it was alleged that there was prolonged kissing and oral sex. AC's ex-former wife had submitted information that she denied adamantly any kind of affair through the community. Licensee's response was in a timely fashion. Dr. Padilla firmly disputes allegations that he ever had any physical contact with former wife, has never engaged in sexual relationships with a former client, never has had an emotional relationship with a fellow client, does not have a sister, a no, a biggie, never been sexually abused, and never engaged in self-harming behaviors. Licensee began treating July 2017 through Sunlight Center for Change. He concurred a diagnosis of a previous therapist. Husband was seen in one session, and Dr. Padilla thought the session went well. Sometime in October 2017, ex-wife contacted us, offered to cancel all of her appointments. At that time, she expressed concern that she had felt an attraction to licensee, that she knew that no one could help her, and that the doctor was manipulating her into leaving him, unquote. Dr. Padilla continued because the pattern of early termination of this diagnosis.
Dr. Brundage, do you need to pause for a minute and drink some water? Okay.
I just drank some. That will help. in November 28th, discussed transference with ex-wife, expressed concern she had a crush on him, discussed again December 1st, 2017, and February 28th, 2018. Dr. Padilla acknowledges that after termination of therapeutic relationship, that ex-wife would contact him. He did not see this contact, quote, as therapeutic. Acknowledges that he crossed boundaries, and Dr. Padilla acknowledges that he knew she would use the journal, however, was unaware of the content of that journal. On November 27, 2018, Board staff received communication from an ex-wife who adamantly denied having an affair with Dr. Padilla. At this time, that's just the complaint screening committee had asked for further information for Dr. Padilla with regard to any kind of text. There was concern that he had used Snapchat as a form of communication, and there is no record of that. And to my knowledge, nothing further has been provided to the board other than a brief. That's a brief summary of my report.
Thank you very much, Dr. Brundage. We'll proceed with questions. Do any board members have questions of the doctor? Ms. Shreve has asked first.
Dr. Padilla, you've heard the summary. Did you have any appropriate relations with this client?
Appropriate or inappropriate?
Inappropriate.
No, ma'am.
Any thoughts on why that would have been the impression that she may have said in a journal or implied? We can't talk about diagnoses. If we need to, we need to go into executive session.
Right. I don't know that that's necessary. The diagnosis that she had, though, I believe fantasy, journaling, talking about crushes and attractions and things like that is very common. And again, I did not know that this was the content of her journal when she was doing it until this came out. But knowing that that was the content of her journal after the fact doesn't surprise me, given the diagnosis that she had.
Okay. And we've read all those your notes and stuff. All right. Thank you.
Dr. Padilla.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, I know the complainant's wife has, or ex-wife has, denied any inappropriate relations, and I think at our last meeting, that was kind of the, but one of the concerns that continue to remain, and that's why we are here today, is the texting and the kind of crossing of boundaries and the late night texting, and regardless of whether it was, just the lack of boundaries. And so I'm just wondering, can you address that?
Yes, I would be happy to. So in my supervision that I sought after the fact, this has been the topic of that for every time. And the conversation has really narrowed it down to the fact that I had pretty much two appropriate choices. And that I made a third choice that is why I'm here. And the two appropriate choices would have been to either, at the time of discharge...
Can you speak a little more in your mic?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Or
yes,
move the mic. You can move the mic to you.
Okay. The two appropriate choices would have been to either, at the time of discharge, making that be the clean cut, no more contact, or somehow making the arrangement that I would remain her therapist, I would remain her point of support during the transitional period between when she left Tucson and got to Seattle and established care with somebody else. What I did instead was, when I discharged her, I discussed with her before her leaving, because her leaving was not because we were done with treatment. Her leaving was because her husband got a job in Seattle and we had to end treatment. So she was not in a place where she felt stable or safe to be unsupported. So my intentions were, okay, you're not my client anymore, but I am comfortable with maintaining a supportive contact with you. And at first when she left, that was very frequent, and it was at different times of the day and different times of the night, and I work until 8 o'clock at night, so a 9 o'clock phone call or a 10 o'clock phone call or an 11 o'clock text wasn't weird for me because I was already up those hours anyway. But my other intention was I wanted to be, when she was feeling unsafe or feeling unstable, able to respond. And what, like I said, my supervisor and I have narrowed it down to is that I could have done that safely without having to worry about a complaint to the board if I had maintained either her, like if I had maintained the relationship as her therapist in the transitional period until she got somebody else. But I didn't. What I did was my intentions were good. I wanted her to be okay. I wanted her to be safe. And I wanted her to know that she wasn't alone in this new place where she had been brought to, voluntarily. I know that she was excited to go. I know that it was untimely, but it wasn't something that was terrible. But she was worried about her mental health and her stability in that regard. And so I decided that I was happy to, again, maintain that supportive role. But in hindsight now, after discussing with my supervisor, what I should have done was, A, talk to my supervisor then, and said, hey, I have this client that's leaving town. I don't know exactly what the correct logistical way of going about this would be. And at that point, probably would have been told, hey, do this and do that, and that wouldn't have been an issue then. But again, hindsight, that's why and what the thought process was. And when I talked to my supervisor as well about, and why didn't I ask for supervision around this? Why didn't you do that? Because in the moment, she said you didn't feel like you were doing something wrong. You didn't feel like you needed to, so you didn't. But now you know you should have. And it's basically that's the bottom line. I don't know if I addressed that.
So that's a really interesting point you made. You said, I didn't know I was doing something wrong. And so I'm thinking in the future. Not just this situation, but other situations. How do you discern whether something's right or wrong?
Well, I will say that my vigilance now is super intensified. I don't want to be in front of you guys again. So basically now I am hyper-vigilant. I was asked, I believe at the last meeting about, my approach to things and the documentation that I have and whatnot. And, one of the new additions to my intake forms is a media policy, which is, I have an email, I have an office phone number with a voicemail box, and that's it. And if you have needs outside of the, typical scheduling or the in between session stuff that can arise, then there's 911 for that, and there's a crisis response center for that, and there are other instruments at your disposal that you can use instead of, I'm freaking out, I need to call my therapist right now, and expect that he's going to be available, because it clearly now states that I'm not. And that goes for texting, and that goes for any other kind of interactions of any kind. If you want to talk to me, you do it this way, because then it's documented and it's able to be produced when it's asked for, and there's no possibility of interpreting things in ways that aren't there. So.
This is the complaint of AC. Can I make a comment?
Not right now. We'll get to you in a minute.
As far as how will I in the future know when I'm supposed to ask, I think I'm asking every second now of everything I do. I'm being obviously exaggeratory there, but I don't want my good intentions to ever be interpreted as not, and I don't want the fact that I didn't know to be my excuse ever again. So I have done since I knew that this was now something that I needed and education in and further information in. Clearly, I've done continuing education, up the wazoo here about, ethics and interactions and media and discharge and, termination and, everything I can think of, including, the new, technology as being, an issue now too, as far as, well, where are the ethics around that? And, I've tried to inundate myself with as much information as I can so that I don't feel like I'm in a position to not know what to do. But even then, I'm still being pretty vigilant. Asking questions about what my supervisor thinks I should do.
Dr. Flower.
Yes, this may go along the same line, but I think during the last meeting we had, the initial review, concerns were expressed about the late night phone calls, like even at midnight, calling for like half an hour, that kind of thing. And then the text messages were frequent and kind of, well, pretty informal, that she felt comfortable addressing you by your first name, which, not necessarily a bad thing, but it
shows. You mean the emails?
Text messages or emails. Okay. I forget which it was, but it would, and, just angry with you for not responding quickly enough, like you were like a good close friend and how dare you not do it. And then, I think we talked about it last time around, sending her an email saying, my door is always open for check-ins, and it implied you actually sometimes go by and visit people who were previous patients. And so, once your butt hits my couch, I care about you, and it's kind of like we become not necessarily soulmates, but you're always in my awareness. I'm wondering how you've changed that. I mean, because indeed, if somebody is going through a transition, you do want to be of assistance. On the other hand, when your therapy is done, strictly it's supposed to be done.
Right.
And it gets dicey if somebody calls you, wants a quick answer to something, but when you start continuing therapy, then it gets kind of muddled.
Yeah.
How have you dealt with those kind of things?
Since this person?
Yeah, I guess at the time you figured I'm doing my best, I'm being helpful. In retrospect, I mean, what in your practice has changed?
All of that. I mean, to put it simply, all of that. There is no... like you said, when therapy ends. And there was concern about the fact that this therapy ended before it was, finished. It ended
like a geographical thing,
right,
rather than you were done with therapy.
Right. And, I understand that, AC, you have an impression that content was a certain way, but because I know that the content was so often, give it some time, it's going to be hard to adjust to the new place. It was very just, things I would say to an acquaintance or a friend just in a supportive way. I know this is hard for you. I know that you feel you're, alone in a new place and give him a chance to help you through this and give this, this new opportunity a try for, for a fresh start and things like that. They were all encouraging I don't want the fact that her reaching out for reassurance was so frequent and at weird hours to equate to, well, then that must mean those conversations must have been nefarious in some way, and because they weren't. But that all being said, that doesn't change the fact that now that would never even be a thing again.
Well, it just shows fuzzy boundaries. Not necessarily, she wasn't talking about, I can hardly wait to be together with you and spend special time, you know, nothing along those lines.
Right. But the fuzzy boundaries is exactly what I'm admitting to. I completely recognize and acknowledge that that's exactly what it was. It was my lack of clarity around what my role was supposed to be in that situation.
And do you have somebody you consult with now?
Yes.
Or, okay, not necessarily a supervisor, but somebody that you review things with?
Yeah, I do. I do. And a supervisor who I do the same with.
Okay, so you're working in a practice where you have like a supervisor who works with you?
No, I have peers that I work with, but I have hired outside supervision from a very experienced licensed psychologist who I respect and accept her guidance from very easily. And she's real with me. You know, when I told her what we were here talking about, her response was, "Whew, yeah, you got yourself into a doozy, didn't you?" And at no point was I like, "No, I didn't." The clarity around that is very easy for me to see. And so at no point have I argued the point that is the issue.
Thank you.
Ms. Shreve.
You've been practicing on your own since 2017?
Yes.
Roughly for a year. And as I recall, is this the first patient that you've had with this diagnosis?
Yes. That was formally diagnosed prior to me coming on the scene.
And was that the behavior now, if you look back, do you see some of that, what the issues were?
Yeah. And
without talking about the diagnosis,
yes,
but in a general sense.
Yes. I mean, it's, for example, with the emails that Dr. Fauci were referring to, where she was, angry and saying, "I can't believe you're, just her angry kind of intensity and having her idealizing me and then villainizing me at the same on the flip side of the coin. And I mean, I feel like because I knew that was a component of this diagnosis, when she was doing that, my response wasn't, "Well, get off my caseload then." It was, "Well, let me work with that. Let me show her that there are people who can tolerate that and stay with you in that and show you that just because you're having a flare-up of intensity in your experience doesn't mean that I'm going to." And I wanted to provide her with as much consistency and predictability as I could, no matter what she was saying, whether it was, "I have a crush on you," which, in my training prior to even getting a license was, you can use something like that to model appropriate behavior, appropriate boundaries, and show that, use that as content for growth. And so when things would come up like that for me, it was, I know that that's part of this diagnosis, and I want to not kick her out because she's doing it. I want to point it out to her that this is part of the diagnosis, and this is something that you are afflicted with, not something that I'm supposed to punish you for. I knew all that from school. I knew all that from training. I didn't know through personal experience, having had a client do those things at me before, but I knew that was part of the diagnosis.
Thank you.
Dr. Bohansky?
Yes, Dr. Brundage, go ahead.
Am I in the queue still, or may I proceed?
If you have some questions, please. We have a couple more here.
Thank you. Dr. Padilla,
yes, ma'am.
Thank you for coming today. Obviously, we have talked in the past, and I would like to verify information. During the therapy with AC's former wife. Did you ever seek supervision?
Not in the formal mode that I have since. I had not hired an outside supervisor as such, but I did consult with my peers as peer supervision, peer consultation about my caseload.
And I didn't indicate that in your notes in the chart. Did you include those in your notes, or was it much more casual?
It was much more casual. It was more caseload, super, peer consultation, not specifically let's sit down and hash out this particular one case.
And you are seeking supervision at this time?
Correct.
And your supervisor's name?
Dr. Sydney Arkovitz. I believe her license number is 420.
At this point, I know that when AC's former wife had approached you about termination, you had indicated to her that you would be working through this process with her, and she changed her mind. I noted in your record that you indicated two or three times that you had discussed this. Do you feel that she resolved the issues of transference and counter-transference? Do you believe that you addressed the issue of transference and counter-transference?
I believe that we started to. I don't know exactly that it fully had the opportunity to be fleshed out. With her, though, in the sessions where she would bring up her attraction or her feelings towards me, my response to her would be that, of course, this is something that happens when you have somebody who is attentive to you and is caring about you and is giving you validation and hearing you and understanding you. And if you're interpreting those things as affection and love and things like that, then that is something that happens sometimes. And that's why the boundaries of no contact with clients, no sexual contact, no physical contact, none of those emotional and physical lines are crossed with clients, so that those transferences don't cause problems. And those conversations, we did have those conversations, but I can't tell you that today, if she was in therapy with a new therapist, that she would say that she's resolved those. But I believe we started to.
Okay. Dr. Padilla, you have several modes of communication: by telephone, in session meeting, by texting, and by Snapchat. Can you give me some kind of understanding of why you chose Snapchat?
So after the fact that we were no longer, again, in my mind at the time, in a client-doctor relationship, I was not picky. I don't know what better word. I wasn't concerned about the mode of the communication. Like I spoke to at the last meeting, Snapchat is an app where I use that app to talk to family and friends, and it's just, it's, right now it's trendy, I don't know, in vogue, and everybody uses it, everybody talks to their friends on it, and it has the component of, after the conversation is over or after you close the app, whatever you guys were talking about, it goes away. And is there potential for that to be used in bad ways? Absolutely, and I'm sure that is absolutely a use that people do use it for. But when I'm talking to my friends on Snapchat, it's not that. And for I don't remember the timeline, and I know that during the last meeting, AC actually corrected the timeline for me, and he very well may be 100% accurate on the chronology of it. But at one point, the idea was brought up, hey, let's try this instead. When that at some point hit a wall because of, I think, AC's reaction to her being on that, then I believe there was a switch back to texting. I'm not exactly sure of the chronology, obviously, but the decision to use Snapchat wasn't calculated in any way on my end anyway. It was like, okay, sure, if that's the way you want to casually get support, okay. Because, again, currently Snapchat just happens to be an app that everybody uses for talking to everybody. So I didn't have any hesitation around that at the time. Again, like I maintain that that's not my current attitude. I'm speaking to the attitude at the time.
Several more questions. This board has requested on multiple occasions additional information, text information from you. Can you explain to us why that hasn't been provided?
I don't have it. I don't have records of many of my texts between myself and many people. I delete texts. I delete the data on my phone. I delete old stuff. And you know, AC also brought up, I think in the initial meeting, if you knew that you were going to be questioned about this, why would you delete it and not have the ability to, you know, vindicate yourself with it? At the time, I wasn't thinking that I would have to provide evidence to anybody about anything. So asking if I had it, absolutely, I would have provided it, but I don't have it.
Okay. I indicate if that on the 20th of April at 11:14, I believe there you made a call to the former wife for 37 minutes. I know you indicated that sometimes you were late at night. Can you describe to me the reason that you made that call at 11:14 in the evening for 37 minutes?
She probably had texted me and said, hey, I need to talk to you. And it was more than a text conversation apparently would have sufficed for. And, you know, the conversations that would happen would often be, you know, her asking a question and me giving her an answer, and then spending a lot of time after the answer reassuring her again and again and again about the answer. And, you know, she would go through a bit of a almost a parabola where she would start out quasi-calm, get upset, and then become calm by the end of the conversation. And, you know, sometimes that didn't happen. Sometimes it did and it was quick. Sometimes it was more drawn out. And, you know, to be honest, absolutely. Were there times where I was on the other end of the line, you know, kind of pulling my hair out like, oh, I really want this to be over. I really want this to have not started in the first place. But in those calls, I would have this attitude of, well, you know, hang in there, get through it, and, you know, provide again one more opportunity for her to have a data point of a time where, you know, she reached out and needed something and it was there. So again, if she asked to talk via text, if I could do it, I would. I did. And that wasn't every time. I wasn't able to every time, so I didn't every time. Which I, yeah.
I guess this was one of those times where I was able to. I was up. She seemed particularly upset via text. I'm not sure what the April 20th circumstances were anymore. So.
Thank you. One more question. During the sessions, and unfortunately, sessions with the board, they blend together, but I think the last session you indicated that you had felt that once you terminated that you then could develop a friendship and that you had continued contact with former patients that you had in Virginia. I believe you practiced there for 5 years. And so that once you terminated officially, you could maintain that contact. Is that correct? And how do you feel about that statement today?
No. And I appreciated the opportunity last time to kind of elaborate on that. And I gave an example of I had a mother of a client who I had started seeing when she was in high school text me and a picture of her daughter crossing her college graduation stage and receiving her diploma. And the text itself said, you know, we wouldn't be here without you. We wouldn't have been here without you. We wouldn't have made it here without you. I'm not sure exactly what the words were, but like basically, thank you for helping my daughter so that now she can be crossing the graduation stage. And, you know, contact from past people in my practice life like that, I welcome. I don't see anything wrong with that. Dr. Flowers asked about, you know, going back and visiting people, and when I'm in Virginia, I am in and around people that I've treated in the past, and if I see somebody, I don't ignore them, and I don't act like I didn't know them unless they, you know, ignore me. But I don't make personal visit calls to people, and the contact that I have with past clients is rare, and it's not ongoing or constant. It's a mom thanking me for her daughter making it through college graduation. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I didn't ever make it a practice of having, you know, frequent casual contact with any of my past patients, but certainly now, I mean, that's only been solidified by this experience.
Dr. Meyer?
Thank you. Dr. Padilla?
Yes, sir.
Can you tell me a little bit about your understanding of the rules and regulations for practicing teletherapy?
I don't want to practice teletherapy. I didn't intend to ever enter into the realm of teletherapy, and therefore shouldn't. I haven't educated myself around the rules and regulations around teletherapy because I don't intend to practice it. I don't know much about those regulations.
I would say I highly recommend you look into that, but from my perspective, you were practicing teletherapy. Okay. Thank you.
Across state lines?
Yes.
Into another jurisdiction? Dr. Flower.
Yes. During the last time we met with you, I pointed out concerns about one of the forms you used, the Arizona Mandatory Disclosure of Information. I talked about the practice of licensed clinical psychology is regulated by the Arizona Board of Behavioral Health Examiners, and that gave the address, and that you're also licensed through them. Has that been changed?
Immediately, yes, that's been changed.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there other questions for a doctor? No? Okay. Thank you very much. We're now going to...
There was a doctor. AC
may have a follow-up?
Yes, I'm going to AC right now. I'm following my sheets. If the complainant has some follow-up issues and would like to present information, are you there, AC?
I am.
And I'd like to swear you in now. Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Very good. Thank you, sir. You're now available to address the board.
There were a couple of things that I wanted to address that seemed misleading to me. One was the statement that the late night conversations and text messages had started after we had left Arizona and relocated to Seattle. If you look at the phone records that I submitted, it actually is quite clear it started before that. And I think the phone conversation on April 20th that Dr. Brundage had discussed. At that point, if I have my dates correct, that was when my ex-wife was still in Arizona. I was not, but she still was and was still seeing Dr. Padilla as a patient. So I just wanted to point that out. Also, I'm on the phone, so it's a little hard to hear sometimes, but I thought I heard that Dr. Padilla had said that this was the first patient he'd ever dealt with this particular diagnosis, which, if true, is shocking to me because I was told by my ex-wife when she started seeing Dr. Padilla that the reason she was seeing him is that he had done his PhD dissertation on this diagnosis and that he was an expert in that field. And I also, when I went to the therapy session, and we discussed the diagnosis in her therapy session, was told by Dr. Pia himself that he had extensive experience in dealing with this diagnosis. The third thing I wanted to bring up was that he had no particular reason for using Snapchat as a medium of communication other than that he just communicated with his other family and friends. On the phone call that he and I had had after I had discovered the journal documents on June 25th, I called him a couple days after. You could look at my submittal and my report for the exact dates and times. I had called him and confronted him over the phone, and he had told me in that phone conversation the reason why they switched to Snapchat was specifically because they were concerned, both my ex-wife and Dr. Padilla, about me discovering the content of their communication and that it may have made it appear as if something was going on that wasn't. And so they intentionally went to a medium that would destroy the messages to protect me. That's a direct quote from Dr. Padilla. It was to protect you, Alex. And as you could probably imagine, considering how out of the norm this whole situation is, I remember that very, very clearly. So that seems incongruent with what he has stated about why they got a Snapchat. Again, what I was told directly to me on that phone conversation was the reason they went there was to hide the content of their communication. That's what I wanted to say.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions for the complainant? None. At this point, Dr. Padilla, if you have any questions for the complainant, you may address them to me. And if I feel they're appropriate, I will ask the complainant for you.
No.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Pia, Padilla, do you have any additional remarks or comments?
Not that I can think of at this time.
Thank you. Okay. The board will now go into deliberation. Dr. Brundage, would you like to lead us?
Thank you, Dr. Bohansky and members of the board. I continue to have grave concerns about Dr. Padilla. Obviously, he's made true effort in trying to rectify the problems that have occurred in the past. We have records that there were 40 telephone calls that are documented that he had with the former wife at very different times. It's interesting to note because it seems that the ex-wife really controls so much of the therapy at times. He's saying he was talking to this person at 11:30 at night, and he was feeling frustrated and pulling his hair out, when indeed who is in charge of all of this? I was very concerned about his inaccurate information that once therapy terminated, that somehow he could create a friendship or a contact. I don't know if he really is even aware of telepsychology laws. I do not know the rules in the state of Washington. But there just seems to be a lack of overall aptitude as a clinical psychologist in practice right now. I applaud his efforts to gain more skill, and certainly Dr. Sidney Barker was just seen as a very positive, very competent person in Arizona. But my thought is that I believe that he would benefit from ongoing supervision. I do feel that there has been violations at a staff and room level, including ethics, and I would like to move forward with a motion that this be followed through with probation. I'm very interested to hear from others. I just find that this case is very, very concerning.
Okay. Let's hold a motion then until we have some deliberation. Others? Dr. Flower?
Yes, I too am concerned about the main thing is the boundary violations. There's certainly hopefully a desire on psychologists' part to assist our clients. But then when we have too much contact, we get too familiar, then it gets to be friendship, and that can get in the way of therapy. Also, it appears he didn't really have adequate training to work with his client without appropriate supervision. So that would be a concern as well. And as was stated by Dr. Meyer, once somebody's out of state and you have some kind of contact, then in essence you're doing therapy. That's another kind of realm, and there are rules for that as well. So a lot of concerns I share as well with Dr. Brundage.
Thank you.
I agree with Dr. Flowers. I don't see a relationship issue. I don't think there's enough evidence to support any of that as much as the boundaries and the contact by the phone, the Snapchat per se. I think that's more the concern.
Other discussions, deliberations.
Dr. Brundage had a motion.
Mr. Donaldson.
Yes, I agree with Dr. Brundage and Dr. Flowers. Dr. Padilla initially he acknowledges he crossed boundaries by continuing to communicate with the ex-wife after termination of services. That's been pretty established. In retrospect, Dr. Padilla acknowledges he was not equipped to treat ex-wife's case. He asserts that all future patients with borderline personality disorder.
You can't use diagnosis.
Diagnosis. With this type of diagnosis, will be referred elsewhere. And he admits he was untrained. And he admits that he crossed ethical boundaries after ex-wife terminated services when she moved to Seattle. I read the whole thing, and it's quite interesting, the stuff that the ex-wife reveals about AC also. And I think in the context of everything that AC had discovered, I think that has some, his own environment has some bearing on the stuff that he was reading that his ex-wife had written. I think that, as Dr. Padilla's referred to, that she had an imagination for sure, and reading her responses, I have one here that on page 72 of 349 says, I don't necessarily believe Scott that he cares more about me than he does about sex. So that pretty much says a lot of stuff about the client that Dr. Badillo was treating. And I read a lot of stuff here that's just, it bears the fact that Dr. Badillo is over his head in treating the ex-wife.
Dr. Meyer.
Regardless of whether or not there is sexual interaction, the boundary violation is of grave concern and has affected the family. So I'm not so concerned about exactly what happened in the relationship, but that there was an inappropriate relationship, along with the other violations of practicing teletherapy, not maintaining that.
The overwhelming sense I'm left with is the presentation of naivete that concerns me in this day and age, and it bothers me greatly. Dr. Brundage.
Dr. Bohansky, I would like you to make a motion.
Please.
Is that appropriate at this time?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. I would like to make a motion that the case against Scott Padilla, side D, license number 488, complaint number 1834, be submitted for probation for the board of 12 months under a supervisor that is approved by the board and under the following conditions. ARS 32-2061G, engaging or offering to engage as a psychologist in activities not congruent with the psychologist's professional education, training, and experience. Number O, providing services that are unnecessary or safe or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice, D, violating ethical standards with regard to bounding violations in multiple relationships.
Dr. Brundage, could you repeat that last alleged violation?
A violation of PD,
okay,
which would be ethical steps in.
You're breaking up, Dr. Brundage. We can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this better?
Yeah, that's better. Thank you.
Okay. That we've got ARS 32-2061G, ARS 32-2061O, and ethical standards DD, violating on multiple relationships.
And multiple relationships, for the record, I'm looking, is 3.05?
Yeah.
And the facts upon which you base this motion are what?
Finding the fact that the boundaries were crossed due to the multiple modes of communication by text, by Snapchat, by telephone calls, that the licensee made phone calls after he had left to go to Seattle, and that he had determined at that point it was a friendship rather than a therapeutic relationship. And I think that we all concur that was a continuation of the professional relationship.
For the record, members of the board, Dr. Padilla was not noticed on a potential violation of ARS 32-2061G. So that I would recommend that the violations that would stand as part of the motion would be O and DD.
Okay.
I would accept that.
I wanted to try to make a friendly amendment or addition.
Oh, wait.
Go ahead.
Are you done?
We're
Oh, still listening. Go
first,
ahead.
We need to be clear on what the findings of facts are, and that's
okay,
what
sure.
counsel is
sure.
advising us on. As the charges that I read at the beginning are the ones that she okay. has reiterated here, and that Dr. Brundage is including in the motion. To what we must first state the findings of fact, and
okay.
that's there.
Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
I have a question for Ms. Galvin.
Please.
Ms. Galvin, we cannot include, we have to do G, and we can't include O, or O, we can't include G.
You cannot include G. You can include O and DD.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I would also request that you specify the terms of the probation. It is a 12-month supervision, board approved, but what do you want to see from the supervisor reports? Do you want to dictate the number of times they have to meet?
We generally follow the same pattern of initially two sessions per month at 2 hours per session for the first 6 months, and that then it goes for that we ask the supervisor for quarterly reports. In the past, the board typically will designate a person as a supervisor. However, I think Dr. Harkowitz has a very firm standing in the professional community. If she's developed a relationship with Dr. Padilla, I would certainly encourage that relationship to continue. So I don't know if we have to vote as a board or if it then goes to the executive director. I would like her to continue the work with Dr. Padilla. But I would say, and then after 6 months, then he can petition the board to then change the scheduling of supervision per month, and based on the quarterly report, the board at that time can decide whether they would like to continue the two sessions per week, per month, or to reduce it in either time or frequency.
If the board approves his current supervisor to continue in her supervisory role, is it my understanding that he would not receive credit for the supervision that has already occurred that he sought voluntarily?
Yeah. I would think so. He would not receive credit.
Say, yeah.
Okay. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I will make a slight amendment.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Now we can discuss.
Just, it's great that Dr. Padilla has the psychologist who's been supervising him. But in the event, say she doesn't agree, especially because of the frequency and amount, she may not have the time, then he would need to come back to the board to get it approved if it's a different supervisor.
Good idea. I accept that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Dr. Brundage, is that okay with you?
It's just fine.
Can we clarify?
And we have a motion and a second.
I think staff and I are seeking clarification as to the current supervisor's last name. Could someone spell that, please? We're not familiar.
Could you spell it?
Yes, it's Arkowitz.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sydney Arkowitz.
Yes, Sydney, Sydney. What about...
Probably license number about 300, something like
that. No, you said that.
I think it's
420. She's 420.
She's been around a while. Okay, we have a vote pending unless there's further discussion.
I did. Discussion?
Discussion. Dr. Meyer.
What about additional training? We talked about the naivety and the
telehealth.
Concerns about education.
Yes. I like that. Is there opportunity out there to take training on teletherapy or ethics?
Yes, there are such courses.
Then maybe we, Dr. Brundage, are you interested in an amendment of for more training in regards to ethics or teletherapy?
I think that would be a superb idea. Multiple relationships, I believe, would be superb. And also, I know that there are different classes provided with focus on telepsychology.
How much and completed by when?
How about another 12 hours, but it doesn't count towards the normal
40,
and in the probationary period, you know, within the first year.
Okay.
Okay.
And it must touch on multiple relationships and teletherapy.
So 12 hours total.
Total.
Mm-hmm. Over and above the 40.
In addition to whatever, you know, is there. Yeah. Above and beyond.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Hey. Any further discussion? Hearing none. I need a roll call vote, please. Ms. Poe.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Brundage?
Yes.
Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
Ms. Shreve?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Mr. Donaldson?
Yes.
Dr. Brundage, or excuse me, Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Flowers?
Yes.
Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
It's unanimous. Motion carries.
Thank you. Board staff will be in touch with you in the next week or so to provide the paperwork and direction and contact with Dr. Sidney as well. Thank you. One quick question. What was the title of your dissertation?
It's a long time ago. Motivation for self-injury in clinical and non-clinical populations of adolescents.
Thank you. Very good. Let's move on. I'd like to go to item number 22. Discussion, consideration, possible action regarding Jamie Makovich, PhD. Possible noncompliance with a consent agreement in case number 1726 and recent information received by the board office. Ms. Michelson, can you?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and board members. There are two matters to review today regarding Dr. Matanovich. The first matter is in regards to possible noncompliance with the current consent agreement and order as it relates to the supervision requirement. Secondly, the board office received information on August 1st concerning Dr. Matanovich that they will need to review and discuss today. To provide some background, in July of 2018, the board accepted a consent agreement and order for probation regarding complaint number 17-26 for Dr. Matanovich. The order specified that Dr. Matanovich would receive supervision at least twice monthly for the first 6 months, and following that, the frequency may be reduced at the discretion of the supervisor. The order also specified that the supervision should include a review of a minimum of 20 cases, and that the supervisor would personally observe at least one of Dr. Matanovich's evaluations. Dr. Matanovich did subsequently receive supervision from Dr. Neil Stafford for 2 quarters. In March, the board had received his second quarterly report in which he indicated that he did not have time to continue serving as her supervisor and had asked the board to be released from this duty. At the board's April 5th meeting, they released Dr. Stafford and requested that Dr. Matanovich locate another supervisor and submit the name to Ms. Jones for approval. Dr. Martinovich did contact Ms. Jones subsequently and indicated that she was having difficulty finding a new supervisor, and Ms. Jones had mailed her a list of names for potential supervisors to contact, and requested that once she had found someone in mind to reach out for approval. Following this, later in May of 2019, Dr. Martinovich did reach out to Ms. Jones again and indicated that she was having trouble finding a supervisor because school was out and most have left as it's summertime. Ms. Jones requested that Dr. Martinovich have a supervisor lined up by the time school had resumed and to submit the proposed supervisor's name for review and approval. In July, I had reached out to Dr. Martinovich to determine the status of her finding a supervisor, and she subsequently left me a voicemail approximately 2 weeks later indicating that she was still having trouble finding a supervisor, but she did mention the voicemail that she had reached out to Dr. Shively. It was unclear if she had reached out to him or if they had actually started supervision, so I did contact Dr. Shively for clarification. And at that time, he indicated that he was not supervising her as there was a conflict of interest. In the meantime, on August 1st, the board office did receive an email from the staff of the Paradise Valley Unified School District who expressed concerns that Dr. Martinovich was still using the same outdated test, and they provided staff with a copy of the report that they were referencing, which is dated June 1st. The school district was the complainant for the complaint that Dr. Martinovich is currently on a consent agreement for. Following this, this past Monday, I did touch base with Dr. Martinovich, and we did speak. At that time, she indicated that she did not have a supervisor and had not called the individuals on the list that Ms. Jones had previously provided. She requested that we resend the list, and during this call, I also informed Dr. Martinovich of the information that we had received recently from the school district. Following this past Wednesday, she did contact me again and requested the entire complaint file for complaint 17-26. At that time, I did prepare the documents for her and included the information that we received from the school district last week so that she could have that information for reference in anticipation of the meeting today. It's my understanding that she did pick up the documents yesterday. And as well, yesterday, the board office did receive another email from the school district as a follow-up to the original email. I did upload this as a supplemental material to the member portal, so it should be on there. Dr. Martinovich is present today, and I believe that Ms. Deanna Shrevedon from the Paradise Valley Unified School District is here as well, if you have any questions for her.
Right.
Okay, thank you very much for the summary. Doctor, would you like to make a statement?
Yes, I would. I am in the process of trying to get a supervisor, and I had called one person that we'd worked together closely, but he said he had his schedule was too busy, so I'm in the process of getting another supervisor. And for one of the districts that I work with, they accept the Wexler 4 and the Wexler 5. But I decided after all of this that even though they accept both, that I'm not going to give Wexler 4 anymore. I'm just going to stop and give 5. It's too confusing. So I think that was the issue with Paradise Valley. And, you know, I'm going to adhere to their standards and not, in fact, not give 4 at all.
Uh-huh. Questions for the doctor?
I have a couple of questions.
Dr. Malott, please.
Yeah, my question is, you know, the report that we reviewed, it indicates that you said 5, but then there were places where it's obvious that you gave 4. So there's a lot of discrepancy within the same report.
Right. I noticed that. And, you know, I think, truthfully, that was a clerical error because I have a secretary that types all my reports. So
you're still responsible for your reports?
Yes.
Regardless of who types?
I know that.
The other question I had, you receive supervision for the first 3 months of your probationary, when you, could you describe the supervision you received?
It was from Dr. Stafford, mm-hmm. and I went out to his office on the west side, mm-hmm. and he went over the Wexler 5, the several other tests with me, and I also gave tests and brought them back to his office to discuss scoring them and so forth.
Did you ever videotape your testing sessions?
Did I?
Videotape it?
Observe him?
No. Videotape. Did you do a video recording of your testing session?
No, I did not. I should, but...
Because when we train students, we ask them, actually they have to, at least at my university, they video record every session, and the supervisor then watches every session to make sure it's happening, you know, the way the test norms are.
Right.
Have you done that as part of your supervision?
No, I have not.
Uh-huh. For the record, could you please introduce to you?
Yes, I'm Pam Matanovich. I'm Jamie's daughter.
Okay.
And just support statements and...
Thank you.
Okay.
And just as a side note, I believe it was longer than 3 months that she met with him. It started in August, didn't it? And then he took a break, I think, in December.
Okay.
Right. So, and it was twice a month.
It was March.
Yeah.
Question?
Ms. Shreve.
As I recall, we were here at the last time, the concern was that you were supposed to be using the Wexler 5. And that was the point of, you know, learning the Wexler 5, and that was PUSD. Is it PUSD?
Well, it's still PUSD. Yeah.
It's PBUSD.
PB. Too many start with a P. So, yeah, whatever. So, you know, if that was their standard, why didn't you do that this time?
I didn't get that.
Why didn't you do the Wexler 5 on the study that you submitted?
I haven't been submitting any tests to Paradise Valley, so...
But you did submit one recently.
Yes, but I didn't know that it was a Paradise Valley School District. I had confirmed with them that I would not be submitting any more tests with them, so that was my mistake.
I just have some really strong concerns, and part of those is, you know, is being taking responsibility for, you know, having the supervisor. You haven't had a supervisor since April, it appears. Now we're in August.
If could I make a comment on that?
I'm talking to your
Sure, absolutely.
So, you know, why is it that you don't have a supervisor already established? Because this is part of what your profession, this is what was required for you.
Well, school ended, and then I called a number of people. I think the group can vouch for that. And people were leaving, and they weren't in town. I'll call you back when I get back. And so it was an issue of summer. Really. Uh-huh.
But initially, the initial notation said that the board would, they had a list and that they were going to choose someone. And then the following documentation months later said that they were unable to find someone, and if you could do so. So there was a lot of time frame in there where initially someone was possibly going to be appointed to her. Mm-hmm. And so that's why.
All right. Do you know how to apply the Wexler 5?
Pardon?
Do you know how to apply the Wexler 5 test?
Yes.
Administer,
thank you. Administer the Wexler 5 test?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Other question? Dr. Meyer?
Hi, welcome.
He was quicker with his hand, Dr. Flaw.
So how many cases have you done under supervision to this point as a part of the consent agreement?
You know, primarily it was, I think I've done 2 or 3 under supervision. But he primarily it was more of a teaching arrangement than, watching me give the test.
Okay, but the agreement was to do no less than 20 cases under supervision. And so my understanding is, since you stopped being supervised by Dr. Stafford, you've continued to administer reports or evaluations without supervision. Is that correct?
Well, not on the Wexler 5, though.
But have you done psychological evaluations without supervision since the consent agreement started?
No, not on the Wexler
5. Any psychological evaluation?
Yes.
Without supervision? Okay, thank you.
Dr. Flower.
Yes, I'm wondering, part of the consent agreement talks about having the supervisor actually physically observe you do what. Has that happened?
No, that has not happened.
Okay.
That's what I would like to happen. Right?
Okay.
That's what I'm trying to achieve by getting the person that I worked with out in on the west side was very helpful in terms of, I would say, teaching. But he, you know, was his time factor was not such that he could supervise me. And that's really what I need.
Okay, my understanding then is you've had three of the evaluations you've done looked at, and that's the supervision that reviewed your notes? Or how has that been done?
Well, I haven't given, he hasn't, he's gone over my notes with me, yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, but I think you were saying there were three cases specifically, because we were hoping like for 20, so I'm just wondering how many have been.
So according to the last report evaluation that was in March, it says that they had completed that the doctor had completed one assessment, and that she observed the monitor complete an assessment.
Yeah.
So you've completed one.
Right.
How many have you actually completed between the time the letter to now? How many assessments, psychological evaluations, have you done?
From which time frame?
Since when was that? Since May 2000. Almost, when was that? Since January, no.
When did the
Since
doctor?
July 2018, so approximately a year. In the last year, how many evaluations have you done?
Last year. Mm-hmm. I have given approximately 10 Wexler 4.
No, all evaluations.
Oh, all evaluations.
Mm-hmm. Because we don't specify the Wexler 4 in the consent agreement.
Oh, uh-huh.
So how many psychological, on people, how many, or kids, how many have you done?
Well, I would say probably about eight. Because I also do counseling. I do counseling with children that are being bullied and children that are having issues with divorced parents. And I have a master's degree at ASU in counseling, and also a master's in psych. So in the summer, I do a great deal of counseling.
So you've done eight evaluations?
Yes.
And did you make arrangements to have Dr. Stafford observe you during those few months he provided supervision?
I requested that he did, but he's out there and he has many supervisory duties, and he didn't have the time to allocate to that.
If I could just add one statement, that when she would go out and meet with him, it seemed like there was a little miscommunication on he wanted her to observe him, and I think that was possibly part of the write-up, but she had also mentioned that she was supposed to submit tests and show how she tests and her process, and that he would say to her that he doesn't have the time to do that, and so, you know, let's do an observatory type of situation now. So I don't know where the miscommunication was with that, but I know that she was under the understanding of not only observing, but also administering, and him observing her administer. And he had a lot of time constraints with that. And so when we had talked about that and her needing to communicate that to him of what she needs to bring here, and so that is a sidebar to that.
I definitely need somebody to work with me giving the test, you know, watch me giving the test, and then give me feedback on that.
But he was giving a lot of statements about time constraints. And
Ms. Galvin, is there a possibility that we can seek legal advice? I don't see it in the agenda.
You always have that option. It's listed at the top. So
oh,
you
okay.
May.
We can. I would like to get some.
Before we do that, can we ask Paradise Valley what if they have a statement they'd like to make?
So my name is Deanna Shverdian. I work in the Paradise Valley School
Could you
District.
Speak into the
Yeah, you can pull the mic towards
you.
Yeah, just pull it down. There you go.
My name is Deanna Shverdian. I work for the Paradise Valley School District in the Gifted Department, and I maintain all of the testing records, whether it be psychological evaluations or abilities tests. And I was just very surprised to have gotten another report from Dr. Matanovich, since we did have that conversation in the complaint agreement. And Paradise Valley has also taken measures to go ahead and vet psychologists that give us private reports. We have an approved list, per se, and if a parent goes outside of that list, it's a case-by-case basis where I go ahead and vet the psychologist, check if they have had any disciplinary issues, look at their resumes, their experience with gifted as well as with children. So after I received Dr. Matanovich's report, I had to call the parents and let them know that we do not accept, because it is not the most recent testing. And mom had expressed to me that her two older children, who are in Paradise Valley School District and have been since kinder, were also tested by Jamie Matanovich prior. So they are a Paradise Valley family, and that very much is known. And I was just urging parents to go ahead and see who they are going to if they've had disciplinary issues. And I just want to go ahead and make it a point that it's not about myself or the district, but the children. Having had a report which is outdated and gives them scores for programming that is not where their abilities lies, can really damage a child's self-esteem, hurt a family dynamic, because parents believe children should be succeeding in these classes. So really, I'm just here to advocate for those children before any other decisions are made educationally, with reports that might not be accurate or up to date with the norms. So
I will say that I told those parents that I do not test, and I've given everybody a letter that I do not do testing for Paradise Valley School District.
Okay, thank you.
But this was far north, and I didn't realize that it was Paradise Valley. And anyway, I've decided that I'm not giving. It's too complicated. I'm not giving four anymore anyway. But I do not want to. I agree that Paradise Valley has a right to have whatever psychologist they want. And, you know, I think that's their prerogative. And so I'm fully respectful of that, and I tell every parent that if they call, you know, I do not do testing for Paradise Valley. And it's not a conflict or a, you know, angry thing. It's that they don't want me to be doing testing for them. And frankly, I don't want to do it either, because I know there's not a good communication there. So there was strictly an accident, and for some reason the parents, I don't know why, but anyway, they were out farther north, and I wasn't as familiar with the school.
Okay, thank you. Do you have a motion, Dr. Millett?
No, I'd like to talk to...
Yeah, you had a motion.
That's yes. A motion.
And I second
it. I'd like to make a motion that we go into executive session.
And second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. We're in recess into executive.